America's birth certificate, the Declaration of Independence, says that the Creator has endowed us with the right to life. But abortion is at war with the right to life. Since Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court decision of 1973, was overturned last year in 2022 in the Dobbs v. Jackson decision, what has been the outcome? We're going to talk about this right now with Marjorie Dannenfelser of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. Marjorie, welcome to the program.
What a privilege to be with you. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Marjorie, explain why Dobbs is a very significant decision in American jurisprudence.
Well, it's one of the biggest Supreme Court decisions that's ever come down. And I would argue the most important human rights one that we've ever had, because abortion has resulted in the killing of 63 million children since 1973. 63 million children intended for the world and whose moms deserved real help in addressing the root causes that got her there in that clinic in the first place. So this decision overturning Roe basically took the decision out of the hands of a handful of judges on the Supreme Court, back to the people of the United States of America in every state, and also on the federal level in the Congress, so that now the will of the people can make its way into the law through elected representatives. And the wheels of democracy are allowed to turn in addressing the most egregious human rights violation of our time. That's why it's so important. So that day, almost a year ago, Saturday, got us at the starting point, at the starting line for what all that has happened in the last year and will be the work of the pro-life movement and all Americans who care into the future.
But America, in terms of the states themselves, is almost like a checkerboard where, you know, one state is radically pro-abortion in their rights, and then others are pro-life and they have heartbeat bills and the like.
Yeah, that's right. In this past year, almost half the country has enacted laws to save lives. That's 24 states have passed legislation that would stop abortion anywhere from conception up to 12 weeks. So you're right there. And if you are conceived in one state, you have a better chance of living than you do in another. Oklahoma, you want to be born in Oklahoma. You want to be conceived in Oklahoma. You don't want to be conceived in California. And it's, you know, where you live now determines whether you live. Now, before, there were no pro-life protections allowed. So obviously we have made some incredible gains, but it is also very clear that to acknowledge what you read from our founding documents, to truly honor that, we must have a federal standard for that we hope one day will eliminate all abortions in our country, because that is a true reflection of those founding documents. But at a minimum, right now, we need to establish at least some federal minimum standard that puts us in line with the rest of the civilized world. It wouldn't be enough to say 15 or 12 or even heartbeat, but we've got to start somewhere so that a child in California, the human rights of that child are not some geographic calculation. They're actually honoring the human rights of that child, just like they would in Oklahoma.
But now, wait a minute. There are some states, and I believe California is one of them, New York maybe, New Jersey, where a child could even be, quote-unquote, aborted even after that child has been born. So they allow abortions up to 28 days after the birth of the child. Well, that's not abortion. That's infanticide. Mm-hmm. Tell us about those laws.
Well, the laws it is not that clear in California that it's 28 days, but I do know for sure that in states like New York, especially, and California, that a baby born alive is not given the same health care as a baby that was intended to be born. And so that is infanticide. That is absolutely infanticide. And we have people who've lived through that, who have now lived to tell the tale, and what that, you know, and imagine what a beautiful communication that is, what an apologetics lesson living in that person is for the rest of the country. So you're right. The extremes are the extreme polarization that is reflected in the map of our country calls out, screams out for national level leadership that would acknowledge those words and those founding documents and save every life. And we got to get started in this presidential race and in the next federal elections to make sure that that is a full throated debate, that it is communicated along with the apologetics of what this is, along with the needs of real needs of women, what that standard ought to be and how we get started.
Now, the good news is I understand that some 60,000 babies have been saved, it's calculated, since the Dobbs decision. The bad news is, since the Dobbs decision was leaked before it even came out, it came out in June of 2022, but it was leaked in May. The leaker's never been identified, to my knowledge. But since that time, there have been multiple, in fact, more than 90 instances of attacks on pro-life centers and groups by pro-abortion radicals. And there's even been a couple hundred attacks against churches, mostly Catholic ones. Maybe as minor as, let's say, spray paint or something like that. But in some cases, you know, there's been damage to the churches and so forth. And that's directly related to the abortion issue.
Oh, it is indeed. Churches, pregnancy centers, pro-life leaders, me and friends I know, you know, we're not living in the same, we don't feel safe, and many of us don't feel safe in the world that the world that we lived in pre-Dobbs. And it should not be a part of being a human rights believer. That anger comes from the fact that, they don't want democracy. They don't want the will of the people making its way into the law. They don't trust the people of this country, the good people of this country, to enact laws that will save lives. They don't trust them to do that because they're vested in an institution that values that institution more than it does women themselves. And I say that because women do not receive the care that they should when you just give them a pill or an abortion and show them the door. They never get their needs met. Those abusive cycles, poverty of poverty, use of relationships, they don't get what they need. And that's what the pregnancy care centers are there to do. And for them to be the victim of such violence is a horrific and evil irony.
And furthermore, and then this, I would think even the liberals would say, yeah, I don't think that's a good thing. We shouldn't be comfortable with that. Some of the Supreme Court justices who voted in favor of Dobbs, therefore overturning Roe, some of their homes, their own sanctuaries where they live, have been protested. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in one case, one man stated intentions and the means by which he wanted to kill Brett Kavanaugh, or he, you know, claimed that. But anyway, it's like, well, everybody,
that's called assassination.
Yeah, exactly. Every American should be up in arms with that, even if you agree with abortion rights. Yeah, no, that ain't right. We shouldn't allow that. But the Biden administration seems to be allowing it.
They are allowing it. They don't investigate it. They belittle the import of the moment that a Supreme Court justice is a target of assassination. I mean, it is outrageous how we get accused or others get accused of undermining democracy, and they don't bat an eye when a Supreme Court justice is under such a threat, and they remain under these threats now. The other thing is in Congress, it's very clear where Democrats stand on the violence issue. There was a resolution introduced by Republicans to condemn the violence that we're talking about now. And on a complete party line vote, every Democrat voted against it, except for maybe two, I think, and every Republican voted for it. They can't even condemn violence against human beings, and certainly a violence against the First Amendment without question, but they can't do that. And there was another vote there in the House of Representatives on the born alive vote on giving a baby the same who's accidentally born alive intended for abortion, requiring that born alive baby to receive the help that any born baby would receive. And that was a party line vote as well. So, what the polarization that I just described there is like the polarization you described on the map. So we have work to do. While there's beautiful good news, there are lives being saved, family trees will develop, generations will be born, families and weddings, baptisms will occur that never would have. But it also, we're very much in the middle of a war with moneyed and angry people who would like to shut us down.
Okay, we're out of time, but what is your website?
If you just Google Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, it'll pop right up, Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, and there are multiple levels of ways you can get involved. And please come join us. It's the beginning of a brand new pro-life movement.
Okay, Marjorie Dannenfelser, thank you so much for joining us. All the best.
What a blessing. Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, great. Bye-bye. This is Jerry Newcomb with a postscript to our discussion with Marjorie Dannenfelser, who has the website sbaprolife.org. Here's some background information about Roe v. Wade that is worth recapping. Here are portions of a column I once wrote about this entitled Former Fetuses Unite. On January 22, 1973, seven robed men in Washington, D.C., decreed that abortion on demand is the new law of the land in these United States. With the bang of a gavel, they nullified virtually any state law at the time restricting abortion. The High Court decided Roe v. Wade without public debate, without the people's representatives getting to weigh in. And here we are all these years later, still arguing about it. We live in what Dr. Richard Land once called the divided states of America. Abortion is one of the most divisive issues. Associate Justice Byron White, appointed by John F. Kennedy, called this an act of raw judicial power. He could not and did not agree with Roe v. Wade and became one of only two dissenters. The other was William Rehnquist, who later went on to serve as Chief Justice. If you take the time to actually read Roe, you see that great energy is spent to break up a pregnancy into three trimesters and to underscore the point that this only applies to abortion in the first trimester. However, decided on the very same day was Doe v. Bolton, which allowed for second and third trimester abortions in most cases, practically. So we've had abortion on demand as the law for decades. People seem to forget that if the Supreme Court at some future point were to overturn Roe, again, I wrote this about 10 years ago, that would not mean abortion would be suddenly illegal all over the country. It would depend on the state laws. It simply would take the decision out of the hands of unelected judges and into the hands of the people's representatives. Agree or disagree, at least we the people could decide. An interesting fact of the Roe v. Wade decision is that it purports to be based on the Constitution. What provisions of that document were cited to make the case? Where do we find the right for a woman to terminate a pregnancy, so-called? Where do we find the right to privacy? We don't. The two alleged constitutional provisions are Amendments 9 and 14. Read them for yourself. Nowhere in there is there even remotely stated the right to abortion or something akin to it. Okay. So where exactly is the provision in the Constitution that gives them the right to kill the unborn? Michael Ferris is a constitutional attorney, homeschool specialist, author, and as of this recording, the immediate past president of the Alliance Defending Freedom. He has this to say about the constitutional basis of decisions like Roe v. Wade. They're just making this stuff up. Show me the amendment. Show me the language. Show me the textual provision. And then maybe I'll agree with you, but until then, it's just thin air. It's smoke and mirrors. It's a shell game with our Constitution. In closing, I'll never forget a massive pro-life rally in Washington, D.C. many years ago where a young man held up a handmade sign declaring, "Former Fetuses Unite." It may seem comical, but it's obviously true. We're all former fetuses. Isn't it time we unite to protect the most vulnerable amongst us?